Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, January 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Joining us today is Dr. Nina Sachs, retired from Albany Gastroenterology Consultants. She is here to answer your questions on all things involving the gastrointestinal tract. It'll be a busy hour, so get your calls in early. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. With the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Nina Sachs and your calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Nina Sachs joins us today to respond to your questions on gastroenterology. Now retired from Albany Gastroenterology Consultants, Dr. Sachs received her medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and completed her internal medicine internship and residency at Strong Memorial Hospital. She completed her gastroenterology fellowship at Albany Medical College and is a board member of St. Peter's Surgery and Endoscopy Center. If you would have a question for today's program, you should call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Nina Sachs, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
How is retirement treating you?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah?
never been busier, really.
Really?
Really, yeah.
Well, that's good. You still look relaxed, so it's very good. Well,
more relaxed.
Presumably, you still remember the game.
Oh, yes.
We take some
calls. Oh, yes.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Patty in Woodstock. Patty, you're first.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my Dr. Sachs, I have two questions. I think both of them are not too long in answers, hopefully. I have asymptomatic Crohn's disease. It was diagnosed 10 years ago. I had it for about 8 months, very severe, before things were really figured out. And since that attack, when I used probiotics and alternative therapies to solve my problems, I really almost have no symptoms ever. And I want to know, is that unusual to not have symptoms?
Well, I have to be honest with you, it would really depend on where was the Crohn's, how severe was it in the small intestine, colon, how was it diagnosed? There's so many unanswered questions. Sometimes, other things can simulate Crohn's disease, certain infections, which actually would respond to the treatments that you mentioned, okay? So I would want to know maybe at this point, what inflammation is still present, if any, because that would be would be somewhat unusual, I have to say.
My GI doctor in 2009 said I had Crohn's, and I didn't believe it. Okay.
Yes.
But Crohn's last 6 years, I've been tested with endoscopy and colonoscopy frequently, and I definitely have Crohn's according to the laboratory.
Yes. Okay. Well, yes, but you have no symptoms. So aren't you kind of one of the lucky ones?
I am so blessed.
Yes.
Because my niece has really bad Crohn's and she's had surgeries and things. And the other one is when I had my endoscopy, because my dad died of esophageal cancer when he was 55 and I'm way past that. And I did have an ulcer on my esophagus about 4 years ago, but my GI doctor has been treating it. It disappeared in 3 months and everything's great. But in my last endoscopy, about in November, he has now ordered a HIDA, H-I-D-A test. And I've looked it up online, but I'm curious if you might talk a little bit about that kind of test and what kind of things it can show Because often I've had relatives who went in for a kidney test and they found out something was wrong with another part of their body.
Yes, a HIDAS scan is a scan of gallbladder function. It measures how the gallbladder contracts. So it's a different test than an endoscopy, which looks at the esophagus, stomach, and duodenum. So it's a test to look at gallbladder function.
And it does, you said gallbladder function, correct?
Function, how it empties, how it fills
okay,
and empties.
Okay, great, because I mean, I know I've had gallstones for at least 10 or 12 years, but they've never ever bothered me. I've never had a gallstone attack or anything.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you answering that and clarifying it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Patty, thank you very much. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. The number is 1-800-348-2551. What exactly happens in Crohn's disease?
Well, Crohn's disease is an inflammatory bowel disease. So one gets ulcers and inflammation of the GI tract, primarily the end of the small intestine and the colon, but all of the GI tract can be affected. And typically, people have significant symptoms, diarrhea, abdominal pain, weight loss, fevers. So it can be quite devastating.
And there's no cure?
There is excellent treatment. We have wonderful treatments for Crohn's disease.
What causes it?
It is, no one really knows. It may be autoimmune. It may be some type of change in the microbiome of the gut, the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
It could be viral. We don't really know.
Doesn't that drive you nuts?
Well, we're discovering things all the time. So things have changed in my practice time in terms of our knowledge. So yes, it does. But our treatment options have improved so vastly over the years that I'm very optimistic.
Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. Gastroenterology is the topic. It's Medical Monday. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Joseph in New Lebanon. Joseph.
Yeah. I have a question. What the doctor thinks about yoga and other places.
Well, bad connection, Joseph. Try it again. Oy. Well, I think we lost Joseph. Joseph, are you, last chance. Hey, that's the end of Joseph. Jim and Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Does gastro motility change as one gets older naturally, or is it due to changes in other internal organs?
That's a good question.
Gastro what?
Gastric motility. So the motion of the gut. Actually, the motion of the gut can decrease with age.
Yeah.
So that people have more difficulty with swallowing, with the esophagus, propelling food, with gastric acid reducing. So there are many changes with age that can occur. That was a good question.
All right. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Brian in Spencertown. Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
Good. Here's my problem. I feel like I have a blockage that's about halfway down between my mouth and my stomach, and I get this discomfort that's not like acid reflex after I eat. And if I drink water or juice, it feels better. But every now and then, every couple of months, I'll eat something and it won't go all the way down, and a couple hours later, it'll come back up again. So I have an appointment to go see a doctor, but I'm wondering what you have to say.
Yeah, that's something that definitely needs to be evaluated. You have an appointment with a gastroenterologist. Sounds to me like you may, the most innocent thing that you could have would be a ring or web called a Schottky's ring, which is a little fibrous band in the esophagus, and food, if it's a big enough piece, might get caught and then, as you say, come back up, quote unquote. But other things could also be a problem. Ulcer disease in the esophagus, and also, of course, worse things, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the least irritating food to eat?
Something that's, I would say because of this problem you're asking me. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you want to chew your food very well and carefully. Softer foods would be better until you get evaluated.
Yeah.
Meat, very fibrous foods are not good. bread, you know, big piece of bread or a hot dog. I wouldn't eat that.
So Arby's is out of the question.
Yes.
Right.
So
okay. All right.
Does that help? I hope. Yeah. just until, because if it's just a ring, as I said, that could be stretched by a gastroenterologist.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Cool.
A Schottky's ring, huh?
Yes, a Schottky's ring.
Schottky discovered this?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And so it's fiber just grows?
It's a fibrous. Well, it's probably related to silent acid reflux and then the kind of healing or fibrous tissue forming.
So it's a reaction of the esophagus to the reflux.
It usually forms right at the junction between the esophagus and stomach.
So interesting. Yes. And what age is that prevalent?
Gee, that can be... young adult, older adult. And the other thing I didn't mention to him, eosinophilic esophagitis. So that's an allergic reaction in the esophagus can also produce these.
Allergic to food?
Allergic to different foods, but also just an allergic manifestation like eczema of the skin.
Very interesting.
So that and he sounded of the age that might be present as well. So we'll see.
Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. Gastroenterology today on Medical Monday. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And Dr. Sachs, Daniel did just that. Daniel writes, having struggled with GERD symptoms for many years that were mostly episodic and controlled with 20 milligrams of omeprazole, I recently began experiencing more severe and varied symptoms. Scope results were fine, other than some gastritis, but 40 milligrams of omeprazole along with 20 milligrams of famotidine don't do much to alleviate the symptoms. Is it common for GERD to present more severely after years of mild symptoms, and can symptoms be varied, including stomach and intestinal dull pain?
It sounds to me, first of all, yes, it's possible. That's possible.
Okay.
I mean, if you've gained some weight, if your diet has changed, that's definitely possible for GERD symptoms to become
GERD
more severe.
What?
Gastroesophageal reflux symptoms. So acid reflux mostly, and that's regurgitation from the stomach into the esophagus, heartburn, is what we would call it. And that's possible. But I would be interested, though, in perhaps looking at other things for this gentleman in terms of what else might be going on. Irritable bowel syndrome, for one thing, irritation of the bowel. Has there been more stress? Also, looking at the gallbladder, pancreas. So I wouldn't just stop at the endoscopy. I would also, he didn't mention whether on the endoscopy they found bacteria called Helicobacter pylori.
No, he didn't mention
that. And that also can be treated and might be the cause of these symptoms. But I believe that he may require further investigation.
And a bacterial illness such as that could be permanently put away with antibiotics?
Yes, yes, absolutely. With a particular regimen of antibiotics and anti-acid medications.
Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. This email came in from Joel, and Joel writes, we have heard that long-term use of medications within the Prilosec omeprazole group could be counterproductive to potentially harmful. A, what is the most up-to-date thinking in regard to long-term use? And B, should the patient, doctor, consider rotating various treatments? And that's from Joel.
Yes, Joel. I actually just reviewed this because it's an interesting topic in terms of proton pump inhibitors, which are one of the most prescribed medications in this country. And it appears that they've been implicated in all kinds of problems, but nothing really has stuck in terms of true risk that we know of at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to come down the pike in the future. So what I would say is we put people on medications, we never adjust them. We should be reducing them. We should see if you still need them. rotating, I don't think, you know, most proton pump inhibitors are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I think trying to taper them, going to the lowest possible dose, making sure the diet is appropriate, lifestyle changes, weight loss, all the other things we can do to make sure that these medications are truly warranted. The other thing is many people, I dare say, are on these medications for other symptoms, such as this other gentleman who had called, who may have irritable bowel syndrome.
Right.
And has, you know, they've been on these medicines for years, and maybe that's not the right approach. So I think that one should be on the lowest possible dose of a proton pump inhibitor that controls your symptoms, and that needs to be reevaluated every, perhaps once a year.
So despite no conclusive evidence, you sound to me like you think there may be something down the road where there are some...
Yeah, I think that when you adjust the acidic milieu of the stomach, think about certain infections such as Clostridia difficile or other bacterial infections of the gut. I think there is some data, although not definitively proven, that we might be more susceptible to those infections mm-hmm. when we take this medicine. But I think there's been other studies, such as maybe risk for heart disease. I don't think that has conclusively been proven. But I do believe that that all medicines should be reevaluated. You know, I'm a firm believer in that. That do we still need them? What are we treating? I don't want to just give my patient Prilosec forever without a good reason.
Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest on this Medical Monday. Gastroenterology is the topic, and the number is 1-800-348-2551. Jane in New Paltz. Jane, you're on.
Hi. I'm on speakerphone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had heard recently that stevia was possible treatment for Lyme disease. But then when I looked it up, because I thought maybe it might treat other things, they said it might be killing good bacteria, causing people to be more susceptible to C. diff. What do you know about that?
Stevia? You mean the sugar substitute stevia?
Yeah.
I do not know that. I have not read that's treatment for Lyme disease. I do. I'm sorry.
Interesting. Well, I'm sorry about that one, Jane. So no information on that. All right, let's go to another Jane. My heavens, two in a row. Jane in Burnt Hills, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for my call. Over 40 years ago, I had a total colectomy for pan-ulcerative colitis and part of my ileum removed, so I've had an ileostomy for quite a long time. I have been diagnosed with I've had a lot of epigastric pain, and I had an endoscopy and had multiple stomach polyps. I don't have H. pylori, but I was just wondering, and none of them were biopsied, but I was wondering if ulcerative colitis, I know it's different from Crohn's, does it manifest at all in different ways, even after having all that surgery?
You have a conventional ileostomy?
Yes, conventional one, right.
Ileostomy. And your symptoms now, you're having epigastric pain? Is that what you said?
Right. And I did have an endoscopy, and they said it's gastritis with multiple polyps.
They're little
polyps.
Benign hyperplastic polyps. Do you know what kind of polyps?
Well, that's what they observed, but they weren't biopsied.
Okay. Did they check you for H. pylori, for bacteria?
Yes.
Okay.
And that was negative.
Okay. Difficult to say. I would think that probably your doctors have checked you. Sometimes people are felt to have ulcerative colitis, and as it turns out down the road, they actually have Crohn's disease. So one aspect to think about would be how your ileum is doing, the bowel that's connected to your ostomy, making sure that's
right.
Not inflamed. That would be one thought. Another thought. Could be just a digestive issue because of bacterial overgrowth that could occur in people who have had your type of surgery. So could lead to perhaps irritable bowel type symptoms. It's a complicated issue, which I think you really would need to check further with your physician. I assume your gallbladder is free of stones.
Yeah, that's gone.
Okay, that's gone too.
It's gone a long
and
time
you know
too.
The other thing to think about, you've had a lot of surgery, so adhesions or scar tissue in the abdomen can impair sometimes the motility, the motion of the small bowel, so could create some issues as well. So it's not a simple matter, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right. Because I just wasn't sure if ulcerative colitis could manifest later, but what you're saying,
no,
sometimes it could end up being Crohn's, even though the initial 40
right,
years
because,
ago.
Yes, but, because 20 years ago, we might not have known as much pathologically as we do now, and it's possible. But your symptoms sound a bit mild for that, so I'm not thinking that that's the case. But I would talk to your doc, your gastroenterologist.
All right, Jane, thank you very much for the call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. Jenny in Shady. Jenny, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question, my daughter, she's 37. She has ulcerated colitis. About 6 or 7 years ago, she had large intestines, and she has a J pouch now.
Yes.
But she has chronic diarrhea, and everything just, like, a lot of things don't agree with her, but it's nothing you can put your finger on. Is there anything that can be done for that?
Well, yes. So what you're saying is for ulcerative colitis, she had one of the newer procedures where the colon is removed and a pouch is made
yep.
out of the small intestine and then placed into
yep.
the pelvis right above the anus. So the
yeah.
the pouch, the small bowel now acts kind of like a rectum. So I'm just explaining that to
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
And sometimes the problem with that is diarrhea or typically 4 or 5 bowel movements a day, but sometimes it can be worse than that. A couple of things come to mind. She should be evaluated for what's called pouchitis, which is an inflammation.
She knows when she gets that.
Yes, so it's an inflammation
yes.
Of the pouch, and that can be treated. Antibiotics
yeah.
can be useful, also local care. And if she can figure out things in the diet that are more problematic, that's great, but sometimes it's really difficult. There
yeah,
are
I mean,
medications
she takes Imodium.
Yes, but that could work very nicely.
It doesn't.
Yeah. So, you know, there are other more powerful antidiarrheal medications that can be tried, and her doctor, her gastroenterologist, should be very aware of those.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right, thanks, Jenny. We appreciate the call very much. 800-348-2551. Donna is in Woodstock. Donna.
Hi. What's the percentage of getting people off the PPIs?
What's a TPI?
A PPI. So PPI or
proton
pump inhibitor
gotcha.
That we were talking about. You know, really, it depends on why the proton pump inhibitors were started in the first place. If people have severe acid reflux disease, that may be a difficult issue. If they're over.
Well, he had an ulcer mm-hmm. originally and treated that, but then reflux, and it's an ongoing thing.
Well, Ongoing issues may require proton pump inhibitors in various doses. So then I would do what we had talked about, which is try to find the lowest possible dose to control symptoms.
Yeah, that's what they've been doing.
Yes, sounds like the right plan.
You know, while I was waiting, my daughter's in-law had the colonization, I forget what it's called, implant. What is that called?
We don't know.
Well, it treated his C. difficile.
Huh. Any idea?
Fecal transplant?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Fecal
okay. Fecal transplant is a fascinating, treatment where healthy, the stool of a healthy individual is implanted into a person who's ill, such
yeah.
as with C. difficile. It's a last ditch, you know, after they've tried various treatments. It's also being used now. We'll see how it works for colitis, various forms of colitis,
mm-hmm.
even irritable bowel syndrome. The microbiome, that's where the research really,
right.
that's the frontiers now in GI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank
well,
you.
Go
ahead.
His wife didn't work, and then my son-in-law did.
Yeah, it's, yeah. No, it's a It's an excellent treatment when it works. Fantastic.
Donna, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gastroenterology today on the program. And Ellen in Rock Hill. Ellen, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I have been diagnosed with SIBO, which is small intestine bacterial overgrowth.
Yes.
I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes.
The doctor had done a lot of testing on me. They found a cyst on my pancreas and said it's negative, but we can't seem to get this SIBO under control. I have walked around for 2 years with a stomach ache, and I wondered if you had any other ideas.
Well, I don't know exactly what they've done, so it's kind of hard.
Okay,
for me
we've tried.
Yeah,
we've tried antibiotics.
Uh huh.
I've been on the food map to see if food affected it at all. We couldn't identify any food that was irritating.
So you
it.
Were on the FODMAP diet is a special diet, which is
right.
to keep it simple, low in sugars or FODMAPs, mm-hmm. which can cause bloating. And they're sure you don't have irritable bowel syndrome because that can present similar to small bowel bacterial overgrowth and may not respond to antibiotics, but may respond to a more lengthy elimination diet and other modalities to decrease the irritability of the bowel. So perhaps that's an area that could be investigated further.
Okay, I am taking Amitiza for constipation, which helps. The doctor had me do some tests where I blew into a test tube, and the lab said they were finding methane gas.
That's your bacterial overgrowth test. Yes. No, I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying maybe we should be looking, since the typical antibiotics or treatment aren't helping.
Mm.
Perhaps there are other things. That FODMAP diet, did you do it for a 8-week period of time very faithfully? Because that typically does
yes.
work for many people. Okay.
All right.
Yes,
all right.
I did.
Yeah, You're a challenge for your physician.
Ellen, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest, and we go to Vida in Olive Bridge. You're on.
Hello.
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 Hi, Dr. Sachs. I've been diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus, and I've been on omeprazole, a low dose, for many, many years. My diagnosis was given as silent symptoms, so it's very hard to know, because through the endoscopies that I've had, it's been warranted to be called Barrett's esophagus, but without dysplasia. And because there are no actual symptoms that I experience, except initially I sort of felt a tightness in my throat, no difficulty swallowing, but just kind of a tightness. I was just wondering what you might recommend in terms of how to monitor this if there are no symptoms, but clearly there are enough symptoms upon investigation to warrant the diagnosis.
Right, I understand. And that tightness was probably a manifestation of reflux, what we call an atypical manifestation of acid reflux. So you did have symptoms initially. And Barrett's esophagus without dysplasia, has your gastroenterologist suggested perhaps having another endoscopy every few years?
That's the point. Yes,
yeah.
He has.
Yeah.
I've had really good care, and I have one, I think, in another year. My
right.
concern
right.
is that, you know, I feel like I sort of want them every 6 months just to kind of check that things are not, because my body doesn't really respond.
Yes.
I
understand your concern, but these Barrett's esophagus without dysplasia in women, you know, I don't know if you have a long segment, a short segment, you know, that would really depend. A longer segment is of more concern than a short segment. And I would say mm-hmm. that we're finding that the risk of cancer is actually decreasing for mm-hmm. women with short segment Barrett's without dysplasia. So if I could reassure
okay.
you, every 6 months would be excessive in terms of endoscopies for a person with such as you're describing, unless there was something that I'm not appreciating in terms of your history. So that's something
yeah.
you could sit down with your GI and say, listen, why is it that you're planning on repeating this endoscopy in 3 years? What are your concerns? How long is my segment? And the more you know, probably knowledge is good, you may feel more comfortable.
Well, Vida, thanks for the call. Let's take a break here. Nina Sachs is our guest, gastroenterology on Medical Monday today. The number is 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop Medical Monday. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. Ray Graff with you at 1-800-348-2551. And two fast emails here, Dr. Sachs, and then we'll go back to the phones for the home stretch. This one is from, doesn't say, just says wondering. Subject heading, hey, did you wash your hands? I have an 11-year-old nephew, good kid, but also a wiseacre, who claims he doesn't need to wash his hands after using the toilet because, quote, I'm healthy and the germs are already part of my system, so they can't hurt me. My sister has so far been able to keep him in check with, well, they're not necessarily part of our system, so they could hurt us. So get in there and wash your hands before you come to the table. I don't really have a dog in this fight, but wonder if he may be partially right. If otherwise healthy, are we, in a sense, immune to the germs already in our own intestines? And that is from wondering.
Wow.
Now, that's a new one. That's a new one.
Wow.
Yeah.
He may have a point, but his mother's point is well taken.
Okay.
Okay.
So wash the hands.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. This one is from Paul. I was being treated for over 3 years for skin issues on my hands. Many different treatments were unsuccessful. The dermatologist suggested that I might have leaky gut syndrome and put me on probiotics. Within 6 weeks, the skin condition cleared up. Will you explain what is leaky gut syndrome and its symptoms? Leaky gut syndrome.
It's, I'm trying to think about how his, how your hand rash has to do with leaky gut. This is, I may be stumped. It's,
wow.
It's an illness where bacteria can leak out of the gut because the gut is inflamed for a variety of reasons.
Right.
But how that's related to issues on your hands.
Aren't you glad you came back even though you're retired? Yeah.
Wow, okay. No, that's a great one.
Well, let's go back to the phones then. Bob in Holland Patent. Bob.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Doctor, I've been born with a upset stomach, I guess you'd call it. Tossed up easily and so forth, and but at any rate, I wound up with the bile backing up into my throat and so forth, and I was afraid I was going to have a throat problem, and I'd been taking Tums and Rolaids and everything for years, I'd buy them by the box full practically, and finally, I found omeprazole and have been taking that for the last, Lord, I don't know how long, 20 years, long time since early on when I first found out about it, I guess not long after it came onto the market. And it works wonderfully.
Yes.
And I do take, at one point it was really bad, and I took one in the morning and one at night.
Mm-hmm.
And since I backed off and I just take one a day, and that's fine. That takes care of the problem. I never have any trouble at all, but I've been doing it for an extended period of time. I would say 20 plus years.
Yes. And your question, should you be taking it?
Well, I wonder if it's
or
doing any harm. You know, the initial instruction was 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks.
Yes, for over-the-counter use. No, I understand, but that presumes... Presumably, you're under the care of a gastroenterologist. You've had an upper scope test.
Oh, yes, I am. Yes.
All right. So you've had an upper scope, an endoscopy. You don't have anything
bad. Yes, I've had them a few times.
Yes. So you have what we would call gastroesophageal reflux disease. It's well controlled with a low dose, which I would consider a low dose of omeprazole.
Yes, it's a 20.
Right.
It's a number 20.
And if you try to stop it, your symptoms return. So
for you,
you're already on the lowest possible dose to control your symptoms. And for you, it's really a quality of life issue.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were my patient, I would likely advise you to continue with that and just make sure that you're eating properly, not eating late at night, you know, doing all the things also to control acid reflux symptoms that you have that you can do yourself. And if you're doing that and still require 20 milligrams, then that's what you need to do. It may also be one other caveat to that. Some people have tried every other day omeprazole, see if that works, or taking it as needed. But if you're having symptoms every day, then as needed would be daily.
Right.
All right. So those are other thoughts about that.
All right. In late years, I've come up with a heart conditions. I don't know if that's had anything to do with it or not.
It does not appear that that's related, at least as of the knowledge we have at this time.
All
and
right.
You're on a very low dose, so.
Bob, you know. Thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's so funny that the over-the-counter omeprazole, usually 20 milligrams, right? I don't know anyone who has ever just taken it for the 2 weeks that it's, they say on.
Absolutely. But I think what that's designed to do is, you know, this is over-the-counter medicine. Let's say you're treating what really is angina and you're taking omeprazole.
Right.
You know, so.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So a person should really see their doctor. That's what. So it's not like, okay, you can only take it for 2 weeks, but you should see a physician and get some advice. That's basically how I interpret it.
Back to the phones. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest. Mike in Kingston. Mike.
Hi. I have had an. I was diagnosed with an inflammation of the bowel muscle in 2001. It's caused me a lot of grief in my life. It was the reason why I dropped out of school. Mostly, what it is it causes a lot of noise, and it makes me makes it very difficult for me to sit in public. I've been to different GI doctors, and I've had different procedures: sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy. However, I was in the hospital recently for a separate issue, and the doctor there put me on Colace. Mm-hmm. And after 19 years, it seems like it's difficult to say I have to see over the long term because it's like sort of like plumbing.
Yes.
But the Colace seems to be helping me a great deal, and it seems like perhaps I'm holding. I've got hope, like maybe this is the thing that's really going to help me. And I was wondering, do you have any idea why Colace might be helping me?
Well, you're having spasm of the anal muscle. Is that what you're saying? I wasn't quite clear of what a bowel muscle.
Yeah, I believe that's what the original doctor had told me. About a year and a half ago, I had been to another GI doctor and he did a sigmoidoscopy and he said he couldn't find anything wrong with me. I was going to go for anal spectrography, but I never got to it. But for some reason, it just seems like air or gas, I can only visualize it, but it's like air or gas gets stuck. That's what the original GI doctor told me, and it just causes like a lot of noise.
Okay.
And it makes it very difficult to sit in public, but for some reason, Colace really seems to be helping.
Okay. Because, you know, there are some modalities where you can retrain the anal sphincter. There are, you know, there is anorectal manometry. There is all kinds of motility studies that can be done now for the sphincter. A lot of research being done. So it's a matter, I think, of getting to the right person. If the Colace helps, what it does is soften the stool. It's really a surfactant, so it softens the stool. And perhaps being more empty might help, you know, in terms of the rectum. But if your symptoms return, you know, not that you need surgery, but a colorectal surgeon or a GI with a specialty interest in the anal sphincter, that muscle, might be helpful for you, you know, that type of evaluation. So,
Mike, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Nina Sachs is our guest, gastroenterology on Medical Monday Today, and Francis in Adams, Massachusetts. Francis.
Hello. I am scheduled for a colonoscopy tomorrow. And I, a few days ago, came down with a bad cold. Is there any implications, any interference that cold might have with the colonoscopy test?
You know what? You got to call your doctor and talk to, because every physician has their own
what would you do?
Ideas. If you have a fever, if you really can't breathe, you know, and are uncomfortable in that way, I would I might postpone. It depends. It really depends. I would talk to you and
kind of figure it out. The cold is not a severe one yet. My nose is running and I'm not coughing or anything like that.
Yeah, your doctor may say come ahead if you're already prepping, but I don't want to speak for your physician.
Yeah.
I would give them a call.
All right, Francis, thanks so much for the call. And we go now to Rosendale. Annie in Rosendale, you're on.
Yes, my question is about this increasing incidence of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in people who are of healthy weight and do not have deep visceral fat. Could insulin resistance be involved in this, and or eating a diet, say, that is higher in carbohydrates, or eating too frequently so that the digestive system doesn't get a break? What do you think?
Do you have that fatty liver with normal weight?
Yes.
You're talking about
I'm
you.
5'5" and 117 pounds.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes that runs in families. Do you have a family history, sisters with that by mother?
No, I mean, I had kind of an alcoholic brother, but nobody knows that he had any liver problem.
Right. What I would say is, there's a lot of research being done now with both fatty liver from obesity, which is really an epidemic. You're absolutely right in this country, and probably going to surpass viral hepatitis as the number one cause of cirrhosis in this country. But there is a lot of research being done, and in normal weight individuals, the treatment options are, as you kind of pointed out, a bit more limited. But high fructose corn syrup, those things that you mentioned should be avoided for sure. I just read a drug called Ocaliva, which has been quite promising in terms of fatty liver. And it may be for you, you might want to get involved in a study. Okay. There are fatty liver centers, such in Boston, where they're studying people just like you, normal weight patients with fatty liver.
I've been told that I have fibrosis already.
Yeah, so that may be an option for you to get involved in a study in some of these new treatments since you are normal weight. So there's not a lot of, you don't have diabetes. So there are fewer avenues for you. I would consider that if you can get involved in a study.
How would she find out about studies?
You can get online and look up fatty liver and look in Boston. Mass General has a clinic I know of, and there are others, Mayo Clinic, and see where you might be able to travel to. I mentioned Boston because it's a little bit easier, and what studies they have available. Your hepatologist, gastroenterologist, should be able to help you with that.
All right, Annie, thanks so much for the call, and now over to Nicole in Nassau. Nicole.
Yes. Hi. I took four different antibiotics for different reasons over a period of 4 months, and then I had a very upsetting gastro disturbance, and I was investigating either leaky gut syndrome or, could you tell me something, what's the difference between leaky gut syndrome and mast cell activation syndrome?
Well, mast cell activation syndrome is just that. It's an allergic reaction of the mast cells in the gut. Now, have you had evaluation for less complex things, or how did they come up with that?
I have IBS.
You have irritable bowel syndrome. Okay.
Yes.
And how did they come up then with mast cell? Did you try Cromolyn or mast cell blockers?
Yes.
And did that help?
Yes, temporarily.
Okay.
But
so
I'm wondering. I'm confused between.
And they've ruled out
small bowel bacteria. Diet for a mast cell.
Right, and they've ruled out small bowel bacterial overgrowth. And
I haven't had any tests for that.
Yeah, because that might be something to consider. It's probably a bit more of a complex issue than we can solve here. But it sounds like you have very thorough physician.
Are you having fun? Are you glad you came back?
Yes. Absolutely.
You're challenging, isn't
it? This is very interesting.
All right. Linda in Albany. Linda.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I won't go into the whole depth of my history, but I do have GERD, severe GERD. I actually went to my allergist lately, and she put the scope down my nose to check for allergy problems, and she said I had reflux right up into the larynx area. So it's pretty severe.
Yes.
But the thing I want to discuss, if you can give me your insight on it, I've recently been diagnosed with esophageal spasms. And they do feel like you're having a heart attack, I can tell you that.
Yes.
And I just wanted your take on that based on my history of GERD and that new diagnosis.
Yes. Esophageal spasm, and it does feel like a heart attack because what it is a spasm of smooth muscle, and the esophagus and the heart sit one in front of the other, basically.
Yeah.
So it can simulate a heart attack. It's a spasm, a muscular spasm in the smooth muscle of the muscle of the esophagus. And what you really would like to get a handle on is what precipitates the symptoms. Sometimes it's acid reflux. So that would kind of fit. You're having what we would call atypical manifestation of reflux with reflux laryngitis, with acid coming up into the esophagus. I assume that you're being treated for reflux now because...
I am.
Yeah,
yes,
so,
I am.
So effective anti-acid treatment can help. If that doesn't solve the problem completely of the spasm, you can use smooth muscle relaxers, the same type sometimes like nitrates that we might use for angina to relax blood vessels.
Yes,
I
have been given that, doctor, because I several times I've been in the middle of nowhere on.
Yes, of course, terribly painful,
and it's very disconcerting. Yes,
yes, it absolutely is. And I assume you've had other tests to rule out actual
heart problems.
Heart problems. So. So,
yeah, absolutely. In fact, they had to screen me totally. Yes.
Yes. And there are other medications. If the muscle relaxers don't work, there are others. It's bethanacol. There's other medicines that your doctor could try. Also, stress reduction techniques. Sometimes that may help, believe it or not, because it helps you relax all your muscles, including the muscle of the esophagus.
All right, Linda. Thanks a lot. Very quickly, let's go to Mary in Maybrook. Mary, you got about 30 seconds.
Yes, I'd just like to know, what are the symptoms of IBS and what kind of a diet can you use to control it?
Okay.
There are a myriad of symptoms of IBS, but there's what's called diarrhea-predominant symptoms, there's constipation-predominant symptoms, and pain, abdominal pain-predominant symptoms. It's clear that if you can find the precipitating factors and eliminate those, that may help. So if stress plays a role, certain things in the diet, sometimes eliminating dairy products, lactose intolerant. Sometimes people are gluten intolerant. It doesn't mean you have celiac, but you're intolerant to wheat products and other sugars. So eliminating those, such as trying a FODMAP diet that we discussed before. FODMAP.
Okay.
Diet. And you can Google that or there are apps for that. And sometimes even trying that or eliminating certain foods can be helpful. Stress reduction techniques. People have used acupuncture, yoga, all kinds of things to help with irritable bowel syndrome.
Would you ever say, let's try acupuncture on this?
Absolutely. Really? I have had patients. Every patient's different, and I think stress reduction definitely plays a role if it's truly irritable bowel. You want to make sure that that's what you have and not something more serious.
Well, Dr. Nina Sachs, thank you for being here today. Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhunkson, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center providing healing, focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addiction. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Once again, thanks to Dr. Nina Sachs for being here today. Tough questions. Thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize if we left you on the line. She'll be back again, maybe. I don't know. Yes. Thanks again for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Splendid job, sir. Joe Makowitz answered the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, oh, yeah, buddy, Rich Guthrie, and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Julie Hart join us to answer your questions about birds. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.